knows, this is the Superhuman Channel.
The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply. It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. It's a Monday. Usually we start off with a slow-moving show on Monday, but we've got a home run show planned today. This is going to be a short week because Thursday and Friday I'm taking off in Louisville, Kentucky. It's Kentucky Derby time. And so the shows will only be airing live Monday through Wednesday, which means that we're going to have the strength and hypertrophy roundtable discussion on Wednesday instead of Thursday this week. So just keep that in mind. Okay. First hour of the show, we're going to be talking with Cam Mitchell from McMaster's University. His group over there recently published some research that shows that maybe heavy weights do not equal bigger muscles. And later in the show, I'm going to have Randy Roach on, author of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. The second interview was sparked by my experiment where I went into the gym and tried a training protocol laid out by Rob Regish that took me 3 hours and 44 minutes to attempt to add an inch to my upper arms. And quite frankly, I'm not dissatisfied with the progress. Half inch on one arm, three quarters of an inch on the other arm since Wednesday of last week. So I don't know that it's inflammation or anything else at this point in time, but we're going to watch and see if it disappears. But that longer training session sparked a dialogue with Randy Roach. And we're going to be talking about some of the forefathers of physical culture and how they would train literally for hours and eat intra-workout meals while they were training. Vince Gironda was best known for his penchant for drinking raw and pasteurized cream throughout his whole workout. So we'll be talking about more of that later in the show. Okay, my first guest is Cam Mitchell. He is a doctoral student at McMaster's University. He holds a master's in kinesiology. How you doing, Cam?
Not too bad. How you doing, Carl?
Wonderful, wonderful. And you work with a great group over there with Nick Bird and, of course, Phil,
Dr.
Stuart Phillips. I'm sorry. I kept getting his first and last name mixed up. That's why I had a little syntax error there. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about this study. First of all, what prompted you to do this study?
If you look at the ACSM or the NSCA, they recommend very specific and very complicated things if you want to gain mass, specifically heavier weights. And we think that there's a lot of different ways you could gain mass. So we wanted to show that there's more than one way to put muscle mass on.
Now, let me ask you a question, because this kind of came up in a discussion last week as a result of my experiment. You may have heard me mention what I did in the gym the other day. I trained for 3 hours and 44 minutes continuously, doing nothing but a series of curls and tricep extension movements using a variety of intensity effects like super slow and so on and so forth. And my arms did respond, and people came on and said, look, Carl, you can't be that naive to think that you could that easily that add that kind of mass to an arm. This is not a protein synthetic response. This is not tissue accrual. This is something else. But isn't it all hypertrophy at the end of the day?
Well, it depends if it lasts or not. I find it hard to believe that you could do a 2 hour, 3 hour workout once a week and every week put another inch on your arm. So probably a lot of that you're seeing could be edema or muscle swelling to do with the amount of damage and work that you've done.
How long would it take for the edema to disappear, you think?
Did you get DOMS after your workout?
No, not at all. That's the other thing I mentioned today to somebody online. I did not get any delayed onset muscle soreness. Now, clearly, the level of fatigue 2 days after was pronounced. I mean, I had a hard time getting my muscles to pay attention and listen. And keep in mind that I worked with significantly lighter weight than I normally do. I was doing curls with 75 pounds and extensions with a total of 60 pounds, either dumbbells 30s each or a cambered bar. And my normal curling weight is about 125 and about 110 to 120 for skull crushers. So I was using 70%, maybe a little bit more of my training weight.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say exactly how long edema would last, but within a week or two, it should be completely gone.
Okay.
If we just think from a mathematical point of view, it's not realistic for you to consistently gain that inch.
No. I'm not suggesting that either.
One of the training variables that I do think is important is volume, in that it probably prolongs the muscle protein synthetic response.
Uh-huh.
But probably a three-hour workout may not be the most efficient way to add volume.
Okay, so let's talk about this research in particular. The notion that there's always, since the beginning of physical culture, there has always been a debate, does strength beget hypertrophy or does hypertrophy beget strength? Does one come before the other? Do you have any opinions on that after doing this research?
Well, we know that strength really has two factors, the size of the muscle, mostly its cross-sectional area, and then your ability to activate the muscle. So generally there is a relationship between hypertrophy and strength, but especially when people just start training, definitely the strength probably comes before the hypertrophy because those neural adaptations occur very early.
Gotcha. Okay. Talk about the study. How was it designed?
So we use a somewhat complicated design. We like to use people as their own control. So we have them train each leg independently. We were interested in two things, lifting load or intensity and then volume. So we chose one leg that would train for 80% of 1RM for three sets, another leg that would train at 80% of 1RM for a single set, and then we had a third leg that would train at 30% of 1RM for three sets, and then each subject was in two of those groups. And then we looked at hypertrophy with MRI.
So when you say each subject was in two of those groups, was there a washout and then a crossover, or were they doing this different mode on one leg and the other at the same time? The
exact same time. So they do one leg first on a Monday, and then they train the other leg first on a Wednesday. So they were training at the same time in the same conditions.
Now, I have to ask this question. As a matter of fact, I don't know if it was from your university or not, but I remember there was a study done probably 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago, that showed that training one leg only actually affected the non-training leg with some stimulation and protein synthetic response as well, which was really beneficial for people who have an injured limb, for instance.
So I think you're referring to the cross-education effect.
Okay.
So it's not so much a metabolic effect, but a strength effect. So if I immobilize one leg and train the other or only train one arm, I'm going to see a small strength increase in the opposite limb, but we wouldn't really see any difference in protein synthesis between the legs.
Okay. All right. So that good. Okay. So that's not a confounding factor here to be concerned of.
No.
Okay. How many people were actually in these groups?
So we had 18 subjects in total, and that put 12 legs in each group.
Okay. And what were the ages of the subjects?
18 to 30. Our average age was about 23.
Were they well-trained, trained, not trained at all?
So these were untrained subjects. So our results are mostly applicable with the untrained. However, you mentioned you had Nick Bird on here a couple years ago, and he did some acute protein synthesis work with the same model, but with trained subjects, and he found the same results.
Okay. So it's safe to say that to some degree what happens in the untrained happens in the trained as well.
Yeah, and to remember that if people say they're trained, they're probably not trained with these light loads, so it's a pretty big shock to their system, even if they're consistent trainers.
Okay. Were any metabolic markers like IGF-1 and mechanical growth factor monitored? I think you did some biopsy. Was it just at the beginning and the end?
Yeah, so we did biopsies at the beginning and the end. We were more interested in the anabolic signaling pathways. So if you're familiar with the mTOR pathway. Right. We're not big into monitoring the blood markers, like IGF-1, growth hormone, or testosterone, because although we feel they may be important, we don't feel that measuring them in the blood really tells us anything. It's
right.
only
in the
muscle.
Right.
So we think that hypertrophy is really a local process versus a systematic process.
Okay. And with that, before we take our first break, what about diet, nutrition? Was that monitored? Was it ignored? Was it suggested?
We asked them to eat their normal diet, and then we gave them a protein bar with 30 grams of protein after every workout, just to make sure that it wasn't that some subjects were eating and some weren't.
Was there a requisite amount of leucine, which obviously seems to be one of the stimulators of mTOR?
So in this study, we actually got some sponsorship from Nestle Nutrition, who makes Power Bar. So it was a Power Bar protein plus. It had a tri-source protein, and it had 3.5 grams of leucine in the bar after every workout.
Okay, so good. So you hit that number. Fantastic. Okay, let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to pick up the discussion. We're talking today with Cam Mitchell from McMaster University. We're going to find out whether or not it's important to lift heavy in order to get big. I think most of us already see where this is going. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio. You already know how great the Testo 100 Transdermal Testosterone Boosting Patch is. Well, now it's even better. The new and improved Testo 100 patch now contains D-aspartic acid, stinging nettle root, and androstenotrione to increase free testosterone while reducing sex hormone binding globulin and aromatase enzyme. It's still made in FDA-certified labs and contains all the great ingredients that made it work originally. But now it's even better. Bypassing the stomach to deliver its ingredients throughout the day for greater increases in energy, libido, and muscle-building, fat-burning effects. Get 50% off when you use the coupon code SHR4. Go to AGEFORCE.com and use the coupon code SHR4 and get your new Testo 100 patch today.
From the iconic metabolic expert, Dr. Scott Conley, comes Physique 2.0. Physique 2.0 is the only meal replacement with MetaFX, Beta-FAOCHO. That's a long way of saying the only carbohydrate supplement that has been clinically shown to burn fat. Just like the complete milk protein in Physique 2.0 promotes fat burn, so does the carbohydrate source. This is the first ever food source that can burn fat while building muscle. What are you waiting for? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Physique 2.0 banner ad to learn more.
If you're like me, you avoid the insulin spike from eating pasta, but not anymore. Miracle Noodle is the world's first no-calorie, no-carbohydrate noodle. You heard me right. Now you can enjoy pasta dishes and stay on your low-carb diet. They have fettuccine, linguine, rigatoni, and more. Even angel hair pasta is now a no-calorie, no-carb food. And Miracle Noodle tastes great. So go to superhumanradio.com. Today and click the Miracle Noodle banner ad to learn more about how you can start enjoying pasta again, even when you're dieting. Find your Miracle Noodle at superhumanradio.com today.
Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents, but rest assured, there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today. Sissies may want to stop listening now. Super DMZ is the most powerful legal compound available on the market today, bar none. Super DMZ will give you lean muscle and strength gains at comparable rates to the anabolic steroid Dianabol with none of the water retention or bloat. Super DMZ contains Superdrol dimethazine, not to be confused with other Superdrol knockoffs. Get Super DMZ while supplies last at IronMagLabs.com. Don't wait too long, because Super DMZ is sure to be added to the government ban list. Go to IronMagLabs.com today. Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Cam Mitchell from McMaster's University today about their study examining whether or not you have to lift heavy to get big. Okay. So you had three groups, all using this different protocol, three sets with 80%, one set with 80%, and then three sets with 30%, which is really light. I mean, I have to believe that just the change-up, which we know, you know, when you change up your routine for a while. But although I take that back, these are untrained, so that goes out the window. Okay, so what did you find?
So basically what we found is all groups gained muscle mass, and the degree of muscle mass gain was identical in the groups that trained for three sets for 80 or 30% 1RM. And statistically it wasn't different, but it was much less the gains in the group that only trained with one set.
Okay. And was there a review of where their strength ended up at the end of the study?
Yeah, so that's one of the interesting things, is you can measure strength in different ways. The most common way would be 1RM strength. So both groups that trained heavy, their 1RM strength increased more than the group that trained light. However, if we measured strength isometrically or if we measured peak power output, it was the same in all the groups.
Do you think that's solely a result of central nervous system adaptation as being different for one group than the other?
I do. I'd say that basically they are practiced in lifting heavy.
Right.
It was interesting. I 1RM tested all the subjects, and the heavy group, you could pretty much predict where it would be. In two or three attempts, you'd hit it. For the light group, I'd predict something. They couldn't do it. I'd have to start way lighter. They'd end up lifting more than I'd predicted, more than the weight they'd already failed at, but they just needed more practice. Almost within that same session. So I think if I trained these people heavy for another week, their strength would almost be similar to the group that trained heavy the whole time.
Okay, yeah, because familiarity, you know, has a lot to do with it. If you don't know what that weight feels like for the first time you feel it, it kind of is shocking a little bit. So how many reps did someone have to do to reach failure with a 30% load?
So it... if you've never done it before, probably between about 25 and 35. As you got more trained, you could do more and more reps. So we tried to increase the weight so that they failed around 30 reps.
Okay.
But it's still a lot more than really anyone would be recommending.
Yeah, that is a lot of reps. I mean, that's a lot of volume. I mean, and that's kind of, and I'm thinking about my experiment the other day in the gym, and I'm wondering if you couldn't achieve the same thing over a longer period of time. But segmenting it more so, you know, let's say 20 reps times 10 sets as opposed to 30 reps times three sets. So we can't really postulate that because it hasn't been looked at, but that's what the first thing that comes to my mind.
See, I think that volume's very important. However, like let's say you took the same amount of reps, so you're doing the same amount of work, but now we split it over six sets. I think that we wouldn't see, the same increase in mass because each of those sets would be relatively easy and your muscle wouldn't be fatiguing. You may not really be activating all those type 2 fibers. One of the important things about this study is the importance of going to failure or near failure, especially with these lighter loads.
Which, okay, and I want to talk about fiber in a second because that was my next question, and now that you invoked the word, you know, obviously. But before we get there, failure can be can occur for a variety of reasons, right? Yeah. Let's say one guy ends up with a great deal of lactate buildup or muscle congestion, and he fails simply because of pain invoking fatigue, because of a neural feedback that says we have to protect the body, we have to shut down. Where someone else may not have that accumulation of lactate, and then in their case, it's brought out by the neurons losing the ability to continue to fire the amount of the neurotransmitters to keep engaging muscle fiber. So is it really the failure that brings about this response, or is it the accumulation of metabolic waste in the muscle?
So exactly the first cause of muscle hypertrophy, whether it's load or specific metabolites, no one's really identified perfectly. The important thing with failure is that if you lift a heavy weight, such as like your 1RM, you basically need to activate all your muscle fibers, all your motor units at a high firing rate to lift it by definition, because it's your maximum. Okay?
Right.
If you're lifting a light load, you don't need to activate your entire muscle. A lot of your type 2 fibers aren't really doing anything. Your firing rates are not maximal. But as you fatigue, you're going to need to continue to activate more of your muscle fibers, more of your motor units at a higher firing rate. And then at the point you get to failure, then all of your muscle should be recruited and firing at a near maximal firing rate. And we think that that's what's important, activating all those muscle fibers at a high firing rate for getting this hypertrophy.
Okay, now, talking about fibers for a second, different muscle fibers recruit differently, correct? For people out there who aren't familiar with a fast twitch and a slow twitch muscle fiber, explain the textbook difference.
Slow twitch fibers are recruited first. They have better muscle endurance, more mitochondria, and they are smaller and produce less specific force, so force per area as well.
Okay, and then fast twitch, they take longer to engage?
So, yeah, they're recruited after all your slow twitch fibers are already recruited. They're more fatigable, they're stronger, they're bigger, they're less aerobic, and they're the ones that are a little bit more responsive to training.
Okay, with that being said, was a cross-section done when you did the biopsy of the change in actual muscle fiber?
Yes.
What did you find?
So it's not quite as good of a measure as MRI, just because it's a lot more variable. We're only taking a little part of the muscle. You only get about 100 fibers. But we found that basically in all the groups, we saw increases in both type 1 and type 2 fibers.
Hmm. See, and that would be counterintuitive, wouldn't it?
See, a lot of people misunderstand how fibers are recruited. So we use what we call the size principle, which means that muscle fibers are recruited from the smallest to the largest.
Okay.
So a lot of people would think, oh, I'm lifting heavy weights, I'm lifting quickly, I'm only activating my type 2 fibers. And with light loads, you're only activating your type 1 fibers, where with heavy loads, you're activating all your fibers. And with light loads, you start out only activating type 1s. But as you go towards failure, now you're activating all your fibers. So that's why we can see hypertrophy in type 2 fibers, even with very light loads.
So the bottom line is the early responders respond early and the late responders respond late, regardless of the duration of the movement. But they're commanded by, as you near fatigue and failure.
Yes.
Okay. Tell me about the effects of hypertrophy in these three groups. What kind of muscle gains did you see?
So we didn't see huge gains. Partially it was because we were only doing knee extension. But we saw about 6.5 or 7% hypertrophy over 10 weeks with either the 30% three-set or 80% three-set. And then we saw about 3 and a bit percent hypertrophy with the group that only did one set.
Okay. Was it all protein synthesis, or was some of it the uptake of sarcoplasmic fluids?
We don't think that there was any change in water content in the muscle. we didn't test that in this study, but other people have, and they generally don't find that there's a increase in fluid in the muscle. With our acute protein synthesis work that we've done previously with this model, we showed that the myofibrillar fraction, so not the fluid, but the stuff that's actually contracting, synthesis was increased similarly whether it was light or heavy. So I think we're pretty confident that it's actual contractile tissue that we were laying down.
Okay. Was the evidence of this contractile tissue monitored over the period of 10 weeks to see when this accrual started to begin? Did it start right from the get-go? Did it kick in later? Was it an even growth throughout the whole thing? You know what I'm saying? Did you guys look at how much was laid down at what point in time?
We weren't able to do that with this study. MRIs are really the best way to do it, and they're very expensive.
Yeah.
So we used a very high-resolution MRI, and we, instead of just doing one cross-section, we did the whole muscle. So we're very happy with our measures, and we think they're very tight, but we don't have the money to do it on a weekly basis.
Okay. What about inflammation? We talked about that earlier, about my little rendition of a training protocol here. Was inflammation monitored? How much of it was inflammation from week to week?
So how we controlled for that is we made sure that when they did their first MRI, that they hadn't done any training at all, and their last MRI was at least 4 days after they'd done any sort of training. We also had them lie down for an hour before they got in the scanner. So just if they had any inflammation, because some subjects had been maybe walking around and standing all day, where some subjects hadn't, we tried to normalize that. And I think we're pretty confident that it was muscle, because we didn't, we gave them enough time after a workout to let the inflammation subside.
Okay. Well, we have to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about mTOR and some of the signaling pathways that you saw activated in this study, okay? We're talking with Cam Mitchell from McMaster University about their new study. You know what? The bottom line is, whether you lift heavy or you lift light, as long as you go to muscular failure, you're probably going to grow. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio. Your goals, longevity, endurance, vitality, or wellness? Well, you'll find everything you're looking for at uscellwellness.com. USL Wellness was founded on the belief that total well-being begins at the most basic cellular level. Their natural supplements are designed to work with the body to achieve health and vitality. Their formulas are backed by a team of nutritional researchers, healthcare professionals, and nutritional supplement biochemists. Whether you're concerned for your own wellness or a clinician caring for others, it all starts at uscellwellness.com. Save 20% off your first purchase when you use the coupon code SUPER. The ingredients in Halo Extreme come right from the folklore of the Eastern Bloc athletes whose strength dominated the Olympic Games in the 60s. Halo Extreme contains oral turinabol, which increases strength, muscle hardness, and muscle mass while not converting to estrogen or DHT. Iron Mag Labs combines this with a powerful ecdysterone called 5-alpha-hydroxylaxigenin that has shown to increase protein synthesis by up to 200%. Halo Extreme is a great choice for beginners to advanced users looking for low side effects and crisp, lean, easy to maintain gain. Go to ironmaglabs.com today to order Halo Extreme. Melatonin is the best sleep aid in the world, but it has one flaw: the delivery method. Melatonin tablets are not efficient and can wear off too soon, leaving you wide awake in the middle of the night. Time release tablets make you feel groggy in the morning. Now there's the Age 4 Sustained Delivery Melatonin Patch. This transdermal patch delivers a precise amount of melatonin from the moment you apply it and continues to do so for an entire 6 hours. This ensures a full night's sleep while waking refreshed and ready to go. Visit ageforce.com and use the coupon code SHRMEL and save 50% off your first order. Go to ageforce.com and use SHRMEL today and sleep better tomorrow.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. sugar. Just 1 to 2 drops a day and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest protein bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein and the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Later in the show, we'll be talking with Randy Roach, author of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors, about some of the training protocols of our physical culture forefathers. There were a group of brothers who used to do a lot of vaudeville strongman stuff that were well known to train literally for 7-8 hours a day, eat chicken, and drink beer. Now, I'm not suggesting people go out and drink beer, but eating while training was apparently a normal thing back then. Right now, we're talking with Cam Mitchell from McMaster's University about their research on lightweight, when taken to failure, can build muscle, contrary to what a lot of people think, and quite possibly very effectively. Tell me about the signaling pathways that you monitored. Anything else besides mTOR?
Yeah, so we monitored basically the main mTOR pathway. So AKT is upstream of mTOR, and then P70 S6 kinase is one of the downstream effectors that's probably gets a lot more attention these days. So we measured those three.
And so, what was seen? Was there any difference in the two groups as far as these signals?
As far as mTOR was concerned, no. They all went up to the same degree. Part of that's because we gave them the same nutrition, and it's a nutrition-sensitive protein.
Right.
P70, which a lot of people think correlates with hypertrophy, we measured that, and we found that it only went up in the two groups that lifted heavy. So what we think that tells us is that, yes, P70 may be important, but hypertrophy is such a complicated, multifaceted process that measuring a snapshot at one time point of one or two proteins really doesn't tell you that much, because there's so many things going into hypertrophy that measuring one thing and trying to have it be predictive is very difficult.
And obviously, the proof is in the pudding. If the muscles get bigger, it's really what pathway stimulated it becomes a non-issue, right?
Well, not from the granting agent's point of view, but yeah, from a practical point of view, yeah. Nick Bird's study, who you mentioned earlier, he used the same model, and he measured P70 at 4 hours after exercise, and we measured it an hour after, and he found it up with the light loads, and ours wasn't up. So it could just be that the time course is a little different if you lift very heavy versus very light.
Obviously, that makes a great point right there. Did lactate thresholds have anything to do with anything here? Obviously, the guys doing the 80% and maybe – and how many reps did they do at 80%? Eight?
8 to 12. Since they trained there all the time, it tended to go up a little bit. So over training period, they went from doing maybe 8 to 10 or so.
Yeah, but see, do you really feel that 8 to 10, 8 to 12 is still considered a low rep range? I would think personally, and I obviously I'm wrong about a lot of things, But I would think personally, you know, 3 to 5 reps is considered a low rep range in today's standards when you look at how powerlifters train.
Yeah, we could have done that. If you look at most of the recommendations, they'd say that if you get below about 6, that's out of the hypertrophy zone, which most people would say would be 6 to 12.
Okay.
I definitely believe you can get hypertrophy in those lower ranges. The only issue is that you need to do a lot of sets with a lot of rest to get enough volume to see hypertrophy there, but just because you can't do that much because you fatigue so quickly.
See, so volume, and that's one of the things I wanted to come back to in a moment, but about the notion of failure. But so really, volume is where the magic is. And, you know, we've heard this for years now. Within the bodybuilding culture, they talk about the fact that, you know, the German volume training and high volume training and all of these things that allude to training for the pump, which while you may be not necessarily training for the pump, it implies the higher rep ranges. And also training to failure within those ranges seems to be where muscles grow. And from what you're saying, they do get stronger, and that strength can translate over to a one rep maximum if somebody then starts to train that way and adapts their central nervous system. Would that be a true statement?
Yes. So in my own training and some of the athletes that I work with, I generally wouldn't put them through a phase where they do 3 sets of 30% for 4 weeks or 6 weeks, but what I have done is when I'm training very heavy in the 1, 2, 3 range, if I do a few sets there, really work on strength, and then either for the same exercise or a similar exercise using the same muscle group, then add in a couple sets light to failure. So
I like
that. Get those neural adaptations, and then you can really fatigue the muscle in the same workout.
So what you're espousing there is a micro periodization where you actually do these two different forms in the same exercise at the same training session.
Yeah, I don't have any data on that. I've just done it myself.
Anecdotal.
I like it, and it works, and I think that our data supports that it could work.
Okay, let's talk about failure for a second, which you really made me think about this when we started talking about the really low rep ranges, the type that powerlifters use, okay? You know, Arthur Jones was known to complain about people's interpretation of muscular failure. Some people give up before they really go to failure. Other people, I've found through some research that I've done, there's a negative feedback loop to protect the cardio, the heart, the cardiac system.
Okay.
And actually, that negative feedback loop can cause people to start to develop a sense of fear as they start to move into those higher rep ranges where they are now pushing their body into a danger zone, or if they're using a very heavy load. So how do you assure someone gets to fit? I almost feel like, and here's where I'm going with this. Maybe I should pose this statement instead. I almost feel like not everybody can truly push their body to true muscular failure with the heavier weights, but everybody can with the lower weights.
I'd agree to a point. With the heavier weights, definitely in untrained people, they're going to have trouble going to failure, getting full motor unit activation. That should improve with training most people.
Right.
If you've ever gone to failure with a very light load, it's a little different. With a heavy load, if you're doing 8 reps, you knock out about 4 or 5, they feel good, and then you really work to get those last few out.
Right, you hit the wall real fast, right.
With the light load, if you're doing 30 reps, it gets hard about 15, and then you work hard for those last 15 reps.
Right.
So it's a little different, and I think one of the things is the higher you go, the more reps you're doing, the easier it is for people to just give up. So for my study, I was there motivating the people. And like when I've done it myself, I kind of know how to push myself. But right. I think if untrained people with no motivation, you tell them to go to failure with that type of load, they may have a little bit of trouble going to failure the first time. Just because it's instead of doing 2 or 3 hard reps, you may be doing 10 or 15 reasonably hard reps.
What is it? Just out of curiosity, since you said it, what is your, how do you motivate yourself to push beyond?
I tend to work out with a partner and calls me soft if I don't.
Okay. I guess that's universally true, isn't it? That works for everybody. What do you think was the most interesting thing that you learned at this study?
For me, just the fact that hypertrophy can be achieved in many different ways. It's not that only the two ways that we showed in this study, but really, if you work hard, I think your muscles can grow, and it's not as complicated as people say it is.
So just stop thinking and just start working.
Yeah, I think effort is probably the most important training variable. After that, probably volume. And then, depending on what your goals are, I think doing the specific exercises to what you want to get strong in or what you want to improve performance in. Those are my three key variables.
What do you think was the most shocking? What was the thing, one or two things that happened that you thought to yourself, gee, I didn't expect that?
I thought that the lighter group may have got a little bit stronger than they did, but were I doing this study again, and I had a bunch of money, I'd throw on an extra week of heavy training, and I think that I'd definitely show that you could turn that hypertrophy into strength pretty quickly with just a little bit of practice.
What is it about muscle fiber size that makes it stronger, you think? I have some ideas about micro angles, but what do you think it is?
Generally, the cross-sectional area of muscle is what relates to strength. So basically, your muscles are organized into units called sarcomeres. You have them in series along the length of your muscle, and you have them in parallel beside each other. And generally, the more sarcomeres you have in parallel, the stronger you are. Your muscles also, like your quadriceps, are pennate muscles. So instead of them all just being arranged in a straight line, they kind of come at angles and then pull on an angle. So the angle of pronation can change with training as your muscles get bigger as well.
And I have a feeling that those angles, I've often thought of a muscle fiber, the walls of a muscle fiber, as two people pulling a weight with a long rope. And if you both stand really close together, you have to pull very, very hard to get the weight to move. But if you stand far apart, for some reason that angle, the distance of that diagonal angle, allows you to make faster ground with the work. Does that make sense the way I'm explaining it?
Generally, your angle of pronation will increase with training, and that actually makes you slightly, slightly weaker.
Right.
Just because it needs to start to pull a little more laterally as opposed to
right.
In the line of pull with the muscles,
yes,
to make room for your bigger muscle fibers, but that's more than compensated for by you basically getting more sarcomeres in parallel inside your muscle that can produce more force.
Interesting. So you mean the more congested, I guess, or the more cramped the muscle fibers become, that angle gets narrower.
Yeah, but you still end up getting stronger because it doesn't make that big of a difference, and definitely not that big of a difference compared to the benefit of having thicker muscle fibers.
And this brings me to a question that I've pondered for a long time, and that is the fascia of the muscle and what role it plays in this whole equation. Because the fascia of the muscle is kind of like the casing, and if the fascia doesn't let anything inside grow, then everything is pretty much restricted to a certain degree. How does the fascia of the muscle, how is it affected, or does it affect both hypertrophy and possibly strength?
I've heard people talk about that hypertrophy could be limited by the tightness of the fascia, but I have no data on that. I've never seen data on that, so I can't really make a comment there.
Okay. Because you are a scholar, you're not allowed to postulate and put your foot in your mouth like I am, right?
Yeah, I'll hear about it tomorrow if I do.
All right, let's do this. We're going to take our last commercial break, and we'll come back and wrap up the interview. We're talking with Cam Mitchell from McMaster's University. Great research on building muscle comes out of Stu Phillips's lab at McMaster's University. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Never let your spirits down. Once you get her off the street, oh, girl. She likes the boys in the band. She says that I'm her all-time favorite.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at primordialperformance.com.
No two amino acids have been studied more than creatine and beta-alanine, and no two amino acids have been shown to independently improve athletic performance better than creatine and beta-alanine. When you join these two ergogenic powerhouses together, you get unparalleled results. And when you bypass the stomach and deliver them right to the bloodstream, you get the best single legal performance-enhancing product bar none. Save 50% off your initial order by using the coupon code CB50. That's CB50. Go to ageforce.com today.
The ingredients in Bridge read like a who's who of hormones and natural compounds designed to increase muscle mass, focus, and libido so you can keep all your hard-earned muscle gains as you cycle off or diet down. Bridge is not fairy dust. Ingredients like Fatogea, Pregenolone, Phosphatidylserine, and Alpha-GPC ensure you maintain an anabolic environment while Uricoma, Longifolia, Murabuama, Lepidium Mayeni, and Resveratrol keep you feeling strong and focused just the way you were on cycle. Bridge is the most unique supplement on the market that works anytime. Check out Bridge today at needtobuildmuscle.net. Don't lose your gains.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
Are your goals longevity, endurance, vitality, or wellness? Well, you'll find everything you're looking for at uscellwellness.com. USL Wellness was founded on the belief that total well-being begins at the most basic cellular level. Their natural supplements are designed to work with the body to achieve health and vitality. Their formulas are backed by a team of nutritional researchers, healthcare professionals, and nutritional supplement biochemists. Whether you're concerned for your own wellness or a clinician caring for others, it all starts at uscellwellness.com. Save 20% off your first purchase when you use the coupon code SUPER.
From the iconic metabolic expert Dr. Scott Conley comes Physique 2.0. Physique 2.0 is the only meal replacement with MetaFX, beta-FAOCHO. That's a long way of saying the only carbohydrate supplement that has been clinically shown to burn fat. Just like the complete milk protein in Physique 2.0 promotes fat burn, so does the carbohydrate source. This is the first ever food source that can burn fat while building muscle. What are you waiting for? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Physique 2.0 banner ad to learn more.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Later in the show, Randy Roach, author of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. Fantastic. Volume 1 and Volume 2 are out. He's working on Volume 3 as we speak. Okay. We're talking with Cam Mitchell from McMaster's University about their research that shows if you don't want to train heavy, you don't have to. You just have to go further and make deeper inroads into failure. Cam, talk about yourself for a second. Do you train as a powerlifter? Have you played? Have you competed or anything like that?
My background is a rugby player. So I played rugby at McMaster. I played for the Canada under 20 team. Recently retired, and now I'm coaching at McMaster.
So, but you still train in the gym?
Yeah, it's more just recreational now. I do mainly just major lifts, squats, deadlifts, cleans, bench press, pull-ups, that type of stuff.
Yeah, the good stuff, things that build strength. And so, it sounds like you've been applying some of these tenets that you're discovering in this research. But you're doing it with alongside strength movements, doing the heavier movement. So do you do a heavy movement for every a heavy lift for every movement, or you do that as your first lift of the session and then kind of go from there?
I change up my training, but if I'm going heavy, I just find that if I want to keep driving that hypertrophy, I don't have time to do the amount of volume of heavy training that I need.
Right.
So just doing a couple heavy sets, either couple heavy sets of squats and then a light set to failure, or like three or four heavy sets of squats, and then you could go with lunges or something, which are using a lot of the same muscles, with a lighter load to failure.
Yeah, and I fail really fast when I fall over doing lunges because I am an uncoordinated SOB.
Yeah.
So it takes me more focus to coordinate, more focus to stand up straight with each stride than it does to actually get my muscles to do the work. Have you ever tried something called breathing squats?
I'm not familiar with that.
Breathing squat, actually, Randy Roach was one of the first people to tell me about them. And then again, we talked about it with Brooks Kubik, author of Dinosaur Training. Breathing squats came about back in the day. Guys like John Grimmick used to do them. It's when you put a fairly heavy load on the bar and you end up doing 20 reps separated by five deep breaths. In fact, this is what I think they were doing when Arnold and Ed Corney were doing the squats for the Pumping Iron movie. But breathing squats, the first rep, you go down, you come up, you take one breath. Second rep, you go down, you come up, you take two breaths. And you continue in that fashion until you do your fifth rep. And then after that, six on through 20, you take five breaths, deep breaths, in between each rep.
So I obviously don't have any data on that, but I think that could be a good way to train because it would just allow you to lift a bit heavier load but increase your volume. I don't know if you're familiar at all with Berger's work in the 60s. He was one of the first guys. He's kind of where three sets of 10 came from.
No, tell us about it.
I probably disagree with a lot of his work, but he basically looked at physical education classes, and he'd tried different rep ranges and looked at strength gains, and he's one of the most cited people for that sort of three sets of 10 theory. But some of his work is miscited, where the people that got the strongest, they did 10 reps, but instead of lifting the weight 10 times, they did 10 reps in a row with the weight adjusted for each rep so that it would maximize fatigue.
So in other words, wait a minute, when you say weight adjusted, so it got lighter and lighter, in other words?
It got lighter and lighter, so each instead of picking a weight that you could do 10 times, they started heavy, and still by the end it was probably heavier than the weight that you could do 10
for
times.
All 10 so this would require a rest pause, wouldn't it?
Yeah, a very brief rest, but I mean, same with the breathing squats. Like five breaths is going to take a little while, so it's probably similar in the fact that it's doing a set, but just taking a little break in between reps to allow you to go a bit heavier.
The only difference with this is, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is no difference. What I've found out about breathing squats is that they're much harder to do than I thought they would be, and quite frankly, around the 10th rep. Just breathing, which requires, in order for your lungs to fill, your rib cage has to rise, your shoulders have to rise, and you're standing there static with this weight on your back, and trying to breathe under its load, and then go down and squat again. I thought, oh, this is great. I'll be able to really, really go heavy and do a lot more reps than I normally would because I'm going to be resting for five breaths in between.
Yeah.
And it's anything but that. I, quite frankly, it's much, much harder than I thought it would ever be. And I have a lot more respect for guys like Grimmick, who used to do breathing squats with like 450 pounds. I was like, really? You're standing there trying to breathe from, number of reps on up to 20 with all this weight on your back. It's really a lot harder than it sounds.
So I obviously have no data on this. My only criticism would be, I definitely agree it sounds very difficult. But we think that hypertrophy is an intrinsic process in the muscle. So if
yes,
something outside of your muscle is making it hard and is causing fatigue, then it may feel very difficult but may not be the best stimulus for hypertrophy if something other than what's going on in your muscle is what's causing your fatigue.
And we're actually going to talk about this during the second session of this show today, second segment of this show today. And that is Arthur Jones really was one of the first people to come around with this notion that less is more, and finding the minimal amount of stimuli to gain the greatest degree of growth and strength was the goal. But I think that maybe, just maybe, the baby may have been thrown out with the bathwater when we look back at guys like Gironda and even beyond him back to Grimmick. These guys used to train for 3 and 4 hours, very, very heavy moves, lots of rest in between, granted. But the luxury of time allows you to overload the muscles with heavier and heavier weight so as not just to gain hypertrophy, but the central nervous system adaptation contributes to greater strength gains as well. And while it's not practical to train for these long hours today with jobs and families and everything else, it does require the question of in the never ending quest to find better ways to get things done faster. Have we kind of lost sight of the real reason for training in the first place?
My feeling is that the additional volume may be important. Probably 3 hours worth of volume would not be something I'd be recommending. But from a neural adaptations and strength point of view, generally lifting heavy is the best way to get better at lifting heavy.
Right.
So if you're taking 3 hours and doing a lot of very heavy lifts, that may be beneficial. But if you're lifting lighter over the 3 hours, it's probably not going to make you a lot stronger because you're still not getting that practice of lifting heavy.
Yeah, no. And these guys lifted heavy. I mean, yeah. These guys were lifting the types of weight that we use today in our abbreviated 45-minute training sessions. These guys were using those weights through their entire training session, eating intra-workout meals, quite often something that they could drink, raw milk and cream or, you know, whatever, and training for 3 and 4 and 5 hours with adequate rest in between and making it more like work than a workout. And these guys were lifting the heavy weights that they started with at the end of their routines as well, but they just had the luxury of time to rest in between. I mean, you know, when you think about the Bulgarian lifters having the luxury to walk into a gym 8-10 times a day, execute their heaviest lifts, and then go back to their room and relax. I mean, that's a great luxury. Sure, it builds massive strength. Who can really do that? But everyone would like to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to get a grant to do research on that.
No,
I know. Can't apply that to the general population. But, right. Yeah, sounds interesting.
Hey, listen, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks a lot, Carl.
All right, take care. All right, so there you have it. You don't have to lift heavy to grow, clearly, but there obviously are some benefits to lifting heavy as well. Thank you to Stu Phillips' lab over there at McMaster's University for continually pushing the envelope and discovering why we grow from exercise. We'll be right back with Randy Roach. Stay tuned. There's going to be a really good interview. No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan 2, Mechanogrowth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Company.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
I have never endorsed a training guide before The Blueprint by Rob Regish. The Blueprint combines the best techniques for building muscle and gaining strength with the best tips on supplementation and nutrition. Everyone who has used The Blueprint has surpassed their expectations in muscular gains in record time. You'll learn how to break through any plateau, how to make gains from every single workout, and all for the price of a single supplement purchase. Get your copy of the Blueprint today by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Blueprint banner ad. Order today and get copies of both the Blueprint 2.0 and 3.0, plus ongoing support on the Blueprint forum to ensure your success.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at primordialperformance.com.
You may not recognize Muscle Gauge Nutrition, but that's because they've been in the background as a private label manufacturer for some of your favorite brands. Now get ready to hear their name a lot as an introductory offer. Get 5 pounds of pure whey protein isolate for as little as $11 a pound and get free shipping too. Each 30 gram scoop contains the requisite amount of leucine to stimulate the anabolic response. Check out these flavors: cake batter, chocolate, cinnamon bun, ice cream sandwich, rocky road, strawberry, vanilla, and unflavored. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad and use the coupon code SUPER. That's SUPER today.
The ingredients in Halo Extreme come right from the folklore of the Eastern Bloc athletes whose strength dominated the Olympic Games in the 60s. Halo Extreme contains oral turinabol, which increases strength, muscle hardness, and muscle mass while not converting to estrogen or DHT. Iron Mag Labs combines this with a powerful ectosterone called 5-alpha-hydroxylaxigenin that has shown to increase protein synthesis by up to 200%. Halo Extreme is a great choice for beginners to advanced users looking for low side effects and crisp, lean, easy-to-maintain gain. Go to IronMagLabs.com today to order Halo Extreme.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
DJ Yoda, here we go!
Welcome back. Come on, Little Richard, get it over with. Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Randy, isn't it sad? I bet a lot of my listeners don't even know who Little Richard is.
Well, they're probably not as old as we are.
Yeah, exactly. Why did you have to remind me, Randy? Why? Mm-hmm. Why? Anyway, well, none other than Randy Roach, author of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors, Volume 1 and Volume 2. I had copies sent to Adel Musa, a.k.a. Dr. Andro, in Germany. He can't put them down. While he is one of the greatest scientific minds around, that is Adel Musa, in doing research, he said that Randy Roach's books are amazing. Everyone should read them. Anyone who has not read them is missing out on an opportunity to really understand the roots of physical culture. You have to understand the roots if you're going to find your own path in this game, because there's a lot of people out there selling a lot of snake oil. Okay. Randy, in Volume 2, you pay a great tribute to the contributions of Arthur Jones into the physical culture game. Recently, I tested a training protocol that claimed to be able to add up to an inch to my puny 16-inch arms. And lo and behold, I did it Wednesday. It was a 3-hour and 44-minute training session. I have never spent 3 hours and 44 minutes in the gym before.
Just on arms?
Yes. 54 sets. And we're talking about all of them were supersets and or supersets with a combination of intensity moves like super slow. And this morning I taped my arms again, and one is actually a half inch bigger and the other just about 3/4 inch bigger. Now, many people are saying, bull dinky, it's not true, it's inflammation, it's going to go away. But I got to tell you something, I haven't trained my arms. I trained legs Friday. Saturday, I tried to train chest, but I couldn't because I have a pinched nerve in my neck that's affecting my right shoulder, my right tricep. I have pain shooting down all the way into my right forearm right now. And so I really haven't done any direct work on my arms. The day after I trained, they had not grown. And I told everybody that on the boards. I says, you know, I'm not hopeful. They did not grow. And now here it is Monday, and they've grown. And Rob Regis says they're going to continue to grow probably for another week or so. So, you know, what led me to this discussion with you is I felt wonderful the day after I felt trash, but the next day I felt wonderful. I felt like that 3-hour and 44-minute training session did something to me, did something good to me. Not to my, whether my arms responded or not, I felt like, you know, I should be doing a couple of those long, arduous training centers every single month. And then I started thinking about volume one of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors, where you talk about some of the fathers of physical culture training for such long hours that they had to eat intra-workout meals. And then in volume two, in the quest to become more efficient, build muscle faster with less work, Arthur Jones comes in with his high-intensity training. Did we throw the proverbial baby out with the bathwater? Why we train in the first place, to make the organism stronger? Is that served by these shorter training sessions in the end?
Is that your question to me?
Yeah, long one, isn't it?
Well, one of the things Arthur did when he came in was just basically poo-pooed the whole bodybuilding industry, not just bodybuilding, but weightlifting, powerlifting. He thought everybody was training erroneous, too long, too much volume and such, and he tried to condense it all. But it wasn't, he wasn't necessarily just speculating. He was basically going off his own experience, because he too used to train hours a day, several days a week, and sometimes up to 5, 6, 7 days a week back, I think before the, just after the war and such. And he said his best results came probably around the winter of 1953-54, when he cut back his volume dramatically. You gotta remember, Arthur was a very intense individual, so he did everything, and all his workouts, all his sets were to failure. So he was training those long sessions even all to failure. So he was really taxing his body. So when he reduced his volume loads, Arthur was all about recovery. He said he attained a muscular body weight of 205 pounds, and he was only 5'7", 5'8" at tops. And at that time, that was right up in the Mr. America stature. And there are some people who question whether he really got that big, because we really don't have any photos of him at that size. And I don't think we have anybody who really can say they've seen him at that size. But Arthur really wasn't known to be a liar. That's when he made things work for himself with far less volume. And Vince Gironda, again, this is back in the early 50s too, when Gironda was saying, these guys are spending 4 hours in the gym, and it wasn't necessarily the best way to train, because Vince was looking to just do an hour of training. So both Vince and Arthur were both against these large volume training. And you got to remember, going back to Alan Calvert too, those guys at the beginning were also promoting 45-minute sessions 3 times a week. Alan Calvert started writing about the double progression. You know, first you raise your reps, then when you get to a certain rep range, you increase your weight. And he said, if you're going to train daily, then to cut it down to 15 minutes. So the short duration was there before Arthur and Vince brought it, and Real Blair. Remember, before Blair became popular with nutrition.
What was his real name again?
Irvin Johnson.
Yeah, Irvin Johnson. Okay.
He was a very astute in bodybuilding, and he and Vince broke away from that. Geez, I'm getting off on a bunch of different tangents.
No, it's okay. Go. We'll get you back.
That whole notion of train for strength, shape will follow. Train for shape, strength will follow. It goes back to Jowett and Calvert, where Jowett was basically, no, you train for strength, and whatever your genetics dictate, the shape will come. Calvert was kind of more or less pushing that you train for shape, because Calvert turned on heavy weight training. He actually abandoned it and started writing against it. And he's basically, train for your shape and your strength will come. Sig Klein basically adopted that, train for shape, strength will follow. Vince Gironda in the early 50s again echoed that, those very words, train for shape, strength will follow. Where the Bob Hoffman and York basically took after Jowett, no, you train for strength, your shape will follow.
But see, here's something interesting. You know, syntax has changed over the years. When Frank Sinatra sang one of his songs and he said his problems were out of sight, today that would mean they were large and grand, but back then they would mean they were non-existent. Brooks Kubik and I talked exactly about this topic. Is it possible when they talked about shape, they didn't mean the physical shape of the muscle, but shape was also used, get in shape. In other words, physical prowess, physical acumen, physical health.
Yep. Yeah. And that's probably what they were mostly referring too. Because, as you know, like, I mean, it's hard to, again, bodybuilding, you think about, okay, he's shaping his body and stuff like that. But there, it might have been a mixture of meaning what they were referring to by training for that shape. You actually go back and maybe read more of what Calvert was saying and Vince and stuff like that. But again, there was a different, those guys definitely were into shorter sessions. It was probably in the late 40s and with Weider coming into the fray. And bodybuilding starting to specialize away from the, it was still under the command of weightlifting, but it was starting to get on its own identity. And training was starting to specialize, and the bodybuilders were starting to do much more volume. And even in the early 50s, I think Weider was printing like Clancy Ross doing, you know, 6-7 exercises for chest. You know, I remember the one scheme where they would do out of those five or six exercises, the first exercise would be done one set, the second exercise would be done two sets, third exercise three, et cetera. And then the next workout, you'd alter them. So the first exercise would be
prioritize.
Six sets. The second exercise would be one set, third two sets. They're just starting to mix things up and do a lot more volume and splitting. And Weider started attacking this 3-day per week training routine, saying it, no champion ever trained just 3 times a week. They trained more. Reg Park was training sometimes twice a day, upper body, lower body. These guys are starting to train 6-7 days a week.
I got to tell you something. I think Park was correct. I think that a lot of these guys who were saying, you see, I guess what it comes down to is, what is the end goal? What is the end goal? If the end goal is to step on stage and have a specific physical form, and nothing more than that, then you find the easiest, fastest path to that. But if the end goal is to not just have that physical form, but to have the physical quotient to go with it, the amount of strength, the resilience, the robustness that you want your body to have, which we know now is really the right reason to train, then I think training multiple times a day is really a great thing. Now, granted, I understand that we don't have the luxury of time any longer. We have, in your case, books to write, and we have, you know, children to raise and schools to drive to and work to get to and all these other things. But keep in mind that all of a sudden, the whole big in vogue movement right now is the new hunter-gatherer fitness. They're finding out that genetically, DNA switches on and off based on those of us who go to the gym in the morning and train for an hour. We think we're doing these great things. Then we sit behind a desk for 7-8 hours. They're finding out that that's working against us terribly. That the people who train more frequently throughout the day, whether it's 10 minutes of cardio before your lunch break or 10 minutes of cardio before dinner or something like that, they actually, their bodies respond differently than the person who just trains in the morning. So I guess it really comes down to, what are your goals? I have to take a break, Randy. I want to come back and I want to pick up on this whole thing. I want to talk about some of the guys who trained for long, long periods of time, including intra-workout meals and so on, and about their strength levels. We're talking with Randy Roach, author of the best 2 books and soon to be 3 that you could ever read if you're interested in health, longevity, exercise, the beginnings of physical culture and its contribution to nutrition. These are the Bibles of our quest. Go to randyroach.ca and get your copies of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors today. We'll be right back.
Like a who's who of hormones and natural compounds designed to increase muscle mass, focus, and libido so you can keep all your hard-earned muscle gains as you cycle off or diet down. Bridge is not fairy dust. Ingredients like Phytogea, Pregenolon, Phosphatidylserine, and Alpha-GPC ensure you maintain an anabolic environment while Uricoma, Longifolia, Murapuama, Lepidium mayeni, and Resveratrol keep you feeling strong and focused just the way you were on cycle. Bridge is the most unique supplement on the market that works anytime. Check out Bridge today at needtobuildmuscle.net. Don't lose your gains.
There are a few products that I believe in the way way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. Wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at primordialperformance.com.
I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest protein bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, melanotan 2, mechanical growth factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like triptorelin or follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Company.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
I did it again, baby.
Yeah!
The ladies are gonna love you.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. You know, quite often you just have to look to the past to get the answers. We don't need a lot of this research to tell us what to do. We have to look at the fathers of physical culture and what worked for them before drugs. Okay, Randy. Who were some of the highest volume trainers back in the day? The guys that would spend literally hours in the gym, breaking to take meals, drink raw cream or whatever, and then getting back and training more. And what happened to them? Were they physically strong aside from being muscular?
Well, even guys like Bill Pearl, Reg Park, those guys spent a lot of long sessions. I think Bill Pearl told me he was drinking a gallon of milk just through the workout alone. I think it was Bill. But I know Don Holworth, he was doing up to 4 hours of training a day, and they were drinking milk during the workouts. A lot of those 40s and 50s bodybuilders, they were doing all sorts of things, especially before. And like I called the 1960s kind of a classic era because the before the steroids, they were trying everything, all these different things to get bigger. And when the steroids came in the 1960s, the drug free guys really stepped it up, because the ones who really didn't want to get into steroids, they tried even more concoctions and schemes to build muscles to try to hang with the insurgence of drugs. And they were doing a lot of, even Bob Guida at one point was training 2 to 4 hours a day. Now, those men today say they may not have, they think they could have done it with less training, but You have to have the physical constitution built to withstand Bingo. That level of training. But even with what you were talking about earlier, with the paleo guys and the hunter-gatherers, there's many theories as to just how they conducted their lives. Some people think they didn't have nearly as much activity as we think. And even if they did, I think it's hard to compare their lifestyle, say, hunting through the day as compared to Carl Lenoir popping off 10 reps at a 400-pound deadlift. In 20, 25 seconds, you just moved 2 tons of dead weight. That's a load. That's a lot of effort that I wouldn't think anybody in out in the hunting field, unless he's engaged hand-to-hand with a saber-tooth or something like that. that's a different type of intensity and different workload that you can't do all throughout the day or even a few times throughout the day. But there are other people who have tried, okay, a little less intense work. It gets to the point of where is that line of diminished returns? You mentioned that, yeah, we all have lives. And even if we all had free time and we want to get optimal, how much training can we train 3-4 times a day? When we look down, okay, how much more did it get us as compared to when we were just doing that once training? Did it get us that much more that it was worth to give up our lives to train that much?
But see, Randy, that's the challenge here is the what did it get us, the target that we're shooting at. So let me. I had a discussion today online with Derek Martin. He's an avid listener of the show. Very, very intelligent guy. Lives in Washington, D.C. And I said, our grandparents were laborers. My grandparents on both sides were brick masons. This was a very, very laborious and difficult job. Lifting heavy stuff, working with your hands. There was nothing light about it. My grandfather on my mother's side walked an hour to work and back each day to save the 5 cents from taking the train to Coney Island, okay, where he was working at the time. So these were hunter-gatherer lifestyles. They may not have been hunting tigers and gathering nuts, but they were lifting heavy things all day long. And you know what? God bless them. They lived into their 90s. They didn't have dementia. They weren't wearing diapers at the end of their lives. They were healthy, healthy people. And I can't help but believe that it wasn't just the quality of food that we have lost in this country, but it was the need for physical activity as part of our daily routine that we've lost with these new cushier lifestyles. So when you say to me, the point of diminishing returns, no one was measuring back then the things we know now that are important to health and longevity. They were just measuring biceps and triceps back then.
Yeah, if we're talking, it's a difference between activity for health and activity for building the optimum in muscle. And again, the major difference between our grandparents and today is there are probably 200,000-300,000 new chemicals that are now in our culture that weren't back then. But anyways, like I said, you and I and a whole bunch of other people aren't the first to be trying these schemes. Like, I remember 1954, Perry Rader did that, wrote about, he was reading, actually 1952, he wrote an article on the work of Chaz Rosenberg about the hypertrophy theory of muscle. And that's when Perry started his, he took a week and trained every 2 hours on his arms and to put that inch on his arms, that inch, somewhat what you're doing. But then again, he realized that most people in our culture can't do that. So he compressed it down. Okay. Most of these guys who like training, they are fairly free on the weekend. So he said, take a day, and every 30 minutes he went down and performed a set or two of for his arms to get that 1 inch. Now, he said it 80% of that stayed with him for about a year until he went on another type of diet or fat-reducing diet, and he lost it at that point. So it was going on, Carl, before you and I were even born.
Right.
You know, I still think of that. Man, back in the early 50s, they were already coming up with these schemes. And John McCollum, who wrote Keys to Progress for Strength and Health from 1965 to 72, he was doing the same thing. He wrote in a 1965 article, and I think it might have been Muscular Development, that he would go away on a two-week vacation. And he'd take a cable set with him and some liniment and a 2 month supply of Hoffman's protein tablets. I kind of figured that he had to get away from the general public if he was going to eat 2 months worth of Hoffman soy in 2 weeks. So
yeah, that's going to cause a lot of flatulence.
Yeah, he needed to be out in the clean air away from the general population. But he was doing the same type of thing, trying to pump up. But I guess the big question is, of all the people who've tried it, did anybody ever stay with it? Or did they just abandon it? And then they have to ask, why did they abandon it? Again, I come up to the question, the point of diminished returns. Like, okay, am I really that much bigger? Like, I mean, I do pump up during the workout that big anyways. Do I want to spend that much time in the gym for this amount? I've not really ever tried it, so I can't say. So you are trying it, and you have to be, you'll be on, you're an honest guy, you'll be honest and say, okay, where can I take this? That you're not going to burn out. Like, I mean, I have trained twice daily. I've done that.
How long did you do that for?
I did that for several weeks where they were, obviously they have to be shorter routines, and I did various schemes, but you'll know when all of a sudden your sleeping is disrupted. You know, for me, one of the indicators of our training is insomnia. And the joints, I know when I'm going to the gym and I'm recovered, when you're doing a warm-up, those weights are floating. And when they're not floating and you feel stress on joints, you know, okay, I'm not recovered here. You know, so you guys, it's that quest for that balance of that volume. I do believe there's volume that's needed. You know, Arthur, you know, again, the muscle fiber typings come into here, this argument. I think Arthur was really good at picking out, number one, Casey Viator, you know, at the 1970.
Yeah, Casey was genetically different than everybody.
Yeah,
else,
so. When Arthur first spotted him in 1970, Casey finished third. Boyer Coase said, had he finished first, there would have been no argument. So he was already at that caliber. Now, Arthur spied him, and at the 71 America, where Casey had won with Arthur, Arthur spied Mike Manchin. These guys are with a long muscle bellies and a physiology that probably responded well to his training. And he was hooked around top athletes, football players. Again, a lot of guys are going to have probably a certain muscle fiber physiology that's going to respond well to his training because who knows, certain fiber types. You know, a set to failure may be the equivalent of several sets for a more general mixture of muscle fibers. This is what everybody's trying to find out,
right,
is what is the optimum amount. I do believe that, again, it's forced in terms of trying to lift a heavy weight to recruit as many fibers as possible, but there still has to be this metabolic expenditure of this make the muscle thing, like, you know, where
but
it's,
see,
it's
you know,
starving.
You know what else is going on here too, Randy?
What?
Like, for instance, there are so many variables that we don't take into account. Everybody, I always jokingly say to Elisa, like, we'll work in the yard, and she'll be like, are you tired? No, not yet. And, you know, I enjoy working hard. It's almost meditation in motion for me. And I always jokingly say to Elisa, I come from a long line of pack mules. My father was a hardworking, you know, he's a working man. My grandparents were. And sometimes just the way a hunting dog, when put in the woods, knows how to hunt without ever being explained how to do this and how to traverse and how to bust a bird. Some of us have genetic predispositions that harken back 1,000 years. Now, with that being said, you know, Arthur Jones may have seen the results that he saw in his own personal body because of some genetics that impaired his ability to recover faster. But clearly what he did at, was it West Point in the book I read, what he did with the military school?
Yeah, West Point, 1975.
I mean, that was very conclusive. That was great information. So it's clear that people can respond to shorter durations of high-intensity work if the only target is muscle growth, okay? When you start to look at the bigger picture, I can't help but believe that for those of us who have the luxury to put in more time at the gym, that it's going to make the organism stronger. When I say that, you know, I talk about on the show all the time that strength in the gym is just one representation of strength. The other thing that you get from it is the strength, the kind of strength that allows you to fight off disease and deal with great deals of stress and so on and so forth. So it just stands to reason that, assuming you're not pushing yourself into the zone like you're talking about, where now you're becoming sleepless, your weight is dropping, you're getting sickly, and you continue to go to the gym and destroy yourself anyway, now you're a fool. But when training for these two and three-hour sessions, you must treat it just the way you would 3 45-minute sessions or 3 1-hour sessions. And what I mean by that is, I knew a guy who was a really great power lifter. He had an 800-pound bench press. He trained once a week. He trained the deadlift, the squat, and the bench press once a week. He came in and prioritized. 1 week he led off with the deadlift. 1 week he led off with the bench press. 1 week he led off with the squat. He was a world-class power lifter. He did not train the rest of the week. I used to say to him, Amado, how do you do this? How do you go, like, just train? He goes, well, it's the only time I can train is Sunday. I can't do it on Saturday because of the kids. I got to work Monday through Friday. So I go, and I said to him, and you make these kind of gains training once a week? He says, yeah, but I go into the gym. He says, and I train for 6 hours once a week. So I guess the takeaway is, whether you get it in small chunks and take your recovery in small chunks, or you get it in large chunks and take your recovery in large chunk, when the target is different, if the target is strengthening the organism, I can't help but believe that longer concurrent training sessions, hour after hour, are actually better physiologically, aside from how your body looks, than the shorter sessions with the sitting behind your desk for 8 hours the rest of the day.
Yeah, well, again, there's proponents obviously out there on the other side, because you're right. You're going against a lot of the so-called research that's been coming in the past.
Right.
15, 20 years that are saying, the testosterone levels start dropping after 45 minutes, the hormone levels start going off that way. You'll find out yourself. Your body will shut you down. If you can do it, you'll do it. And
right.
You gotta be honest with yourself. If you're not happy, you're miserable, and your gains are stopped, then it's too much. Like I have clients who I train once a week, and you can get anybody stronger training once a week, even just for an hour. Now, how much muscle growth will depend on, you got guys who just defy it. They look at the weights and they grow, and they have that muscle physiology that their bodies are just begging to grow, where others, they have to work harder. They do have to do more, and they have to pay more attention to their diet. And like I said, I still think there's a certain amount of metabolic demand that has to be on the muscle to force them to grow. Like Brian Haycock has written, he's got hypertrophy training. We're showing that it's, again, to train each body part at least 3 times a week, some studies where they take them, poor little mice again, they put tie a weight to their one leg and let them drag around. Now, it's not a weight that makes them go to failure. They can't move it. They can move it, but it's a weight, and that leg grows. So it means like the muscle is being under stress more, and it's adapting, right? So, again, we want to try to find the optimal, right? Again, nobody wants to live in the gym. The industry doesn't want that. The industry does not want, the commerce of the industry does not want 6 hour sessions, right? The gym industry doesn't want it because you don't want all these people in your gym.
Yeah, you don't want 300 people in your gym every Sunday for 6 hours.
Exactly. Like Vincent and Arthur were both accused of this. Oh, they just cut their sessions down because they want to get the hell out the gym, right? Get the people at the door, right? But
right.
No, those guys really believed in what they're saying, but it's finding that there is I do believe that there's a volume needed to make the muscles grow. That muscles have to be totally, what, you ever hear this, the occlusion?
I've done two shows on it, Kiatsu, vascular
occlusion. Yeah, you're basically cutting off the oxygen of the muscle. And again, it's the same with a certain amount of volume also starves that muscle of oxygen. And so like the body's pumping blood to that area, pumping blood, bringing oxygen so it can clear out and so the resources can go back to work. So the, almost like saying the body's almost saying we got to grow bigger. We have to grow bigger to keep more resources here.
This makes perfect sense. This is how every organ in the body works. If your thyroid, there's not enough thyroid hormone, the thyroid hypertrophies and starts to grow. That's what happens in goiter. If your adrenal glands are not producing enough and the demand for more adrenal hormone occurs, the adrenals grow. This is true. This is true for everything. So it makes perfect sense that that's what happens when the organ or the body part doesn't meet the demand that the body wants.
Yeah, you were talking to me the other day. Actually, Fred Fornicola brought it to my attention several months ago with the work of Nick Bird.
Yeah.
Nick Bird is his name.
Yeah.
With the higher reps to failure, were for muscle synthesis continuing the next day.
Right.
What was interesting is that they also saw that not just in the myofibrils, but in the sarcoplasm, the mitochondria. And I think Jerry Brainham was writing an article a couple years ago about when they did muscle biopsies on some of the top bodybuilders, that they saw there was a large percentage of type 2A fibers, which have the same characteristics of both slow and
yes.
fast. So there was more. Again, it gets into what the Soviets were getting into hyperplasia, the splitting of a muscle, where the West doesn't necessarily believe in that. They have different hypertrophies, but they called it the Soviets criticized, said, but the bodybuilders are doing all those reps is more sarcoplasmic hypertrophy as opposed to the growth
and
of
it turns
the,
out they were wrong. It turns out they were wrong about that.
Yeah, because there's myofibrillar hypertrophy and sarcomere, and they was, some of them actually refer to that as subfibular hyperplasia, not necessarily splitting, but a growth of the contractile components. But with these type 2 fibers, there's activity going both in the sarcoplasm and in the myofibrils. Right?
And the nice thing about the type 2A fibers is that they function well on glucose or ketones.
Hence the mitochondria, yeah. Right? If there's a growth of mitochondria, that they're sending ketones in that mitochondria to make more ATP. They need that ATP to fire. And if the body's starving of oxygen to come to clear out the waste for it, they're going to need more ATP. So they have to build more machinery there. I'm not a physiologist, but you and I still have brains, and we can still try to put these things together ourselves. And what makes sense or what might be working in this? So we are speculating, but we see that the bodybuilders always look like bodybuilders, and they've always trained like bodybuilders. They've always did more. They always
right.
did more volume.
Right, right.
And they get criticized and stuff like that. But that my arms always grew when I trained like a bodybuilder. I used to, like Bob Hoffman was writing back in the 1940s, big arms, big chest, where he said, you don't have to work really your chest, your arms directly, because if you just work your chest and back, they'll grow. Yes, they will. But I find that the biggest my arms have ever been is when I train them and train them like a bodybuilder with more volume.
Randy, we have to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about Gadge's peripheral heart action, okay?
Okay.
All right, stay tuned. We're talking with Randy Roach, author of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. Get your copy. Volume 1 and Volume 2. These are beautiful books. Put them out on your coffee table. Let the visitors to your home know that you are a physical culturist. Wear that badge proudly. Get Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors at randyroach.ca. We'll be right back.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
You may not recognize Muscle Gauge Nutrition, but that's because they've been in the background as a private label manufacturer for some of your favorite brands. Now get ready to hear their name a lot as an introductory offer. Get 5 pounds of pure whey protein isolate for as little as $11 a pound and get free shipping too. Each 30-gram scoop contains the requisite amount of leucine to stimulate the anabolic response. Check out these flavors. Cake batter, chocolate, cinnamon bun, ice cream sandwich, rocky road, strawberry, vanilla, and unflavored. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad and use the coupon code SUPER. That's SUPER today.
Sissies may want to stop listening now. Super DMZ is the most powerful legal compound available on the market today, bar none. Super DMZ will give you lean muscle and strength gains at comparable rates to the anabolic steroid Dianabol with none of the water retention or bloat. Super DMZ contains Superdrol dimethazine, not to be confused with other Superdrol knockoffs. Get Super DMZ while supplies last at IronMagLabs.com. Don't wait too long because Super DMZ is sure to be added to the government ban list. Go to IronMagLabs.com today. Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 200
157% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for, and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else? AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
I've been watching you. A la 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 long. A la 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 long long.
Welcome back. If I sound a little out of breath, I was just doing bodyweight split squats during the break. Trying to live up to my objective of not sitting behind a desk for 8 hours a day after training in the morning. I didn't train this morning anyway. I took off. Anyway, okay.
Bodyweight split squats?
Yeah.
Your groin's still intact.
What's that?
Your groin's still intact.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I go down pretty deep, too. I feel it all the way in my hip when I go all the way down. I just have to remind everybody that this is Kentucky Derby season in Louisville, Kentucky. This will be a short broadcast week. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, live shows. Thursday, Friday, I'm off going to the Oaks and partying. I'm going to forget about training and nutrition and drink copious amounts of good Cabernet Sauvignon. So there you go. Okay. So, Randy, talk about peripheral heart. Is it peripheral heart action I read about in your book, or is it PHA, right?
Yeah, PHA. Bob Guida, he first, I think, started calling it sequence training. He was writing about it beginning about mid-60s, say 1965, I think he was, for muscular development and Iron Man. It was the, you know, circuit training. But Bob had a different technique where you and I would know circuit training as maybe starting with the largest muscles going to the smallest, you know, legs, back, chest, shoulders, arms, and such. But Bob would specifically work one region of the body and then go to the next movement as further away from that region as possible to pull the blood away from it.
So to force, actually, the idea was to force the cardiovascular system to work harder. So theoretically, you would work legs and then maybe shoulders and arms.
Well, he might do a set of bicep curls, but then go from there and do a set of calf raises to force the blood from the arms down to the calves. And then from the calves, he may go up and do, say, the deltoids. And then from there, do the hamstrings. See what I mean? He's rushing from one end to the other, manipulating lymph and manipulating the blood. Possibly, and he said, you know, he got great results. Maybe he's eliciting the same effect by pulling the blood away from the bicep. Because, you know, when we do a pump on our arms, the pump stays there for a while. But if you're pulling the blood down to another region, who knows? Maybe, again, another trigger for the body. Say we best get bigger to keep more resources here. I don't know. But Bob had his reasoning for that style of training that he believed in.
So what do you think? Was there any evidence that it was actually a good way to train? Did it have any benefits?
I'm sure it did, or he would have abandoned it. I he would probably be a good guest to have on your show.
Yeah, I guess we could talk about that. Yeah.
He's still active in his clinic in Chicago.
Okay, so I could reach out.
He trained a lot of professional athletes, and he wrote Total Body Fitness. He was probably one of the early guys saying core training back in 1982.
I remember that, and he talked about core before anybody did, about making I read about this in your book, obviously. That's where I get all my education. By the way, I wouldn't have a radio show if it wasn't for Randy Roach's books. But anyway, he had this whole notion of spine, pelvis, spine, thorax, how the connective muscles all work together, right?
Yeah, the you know, serial distortion or whatever. Like he had his, you know, the weakest links and stuff as above, so below. But, like, I mean, he was building equipment too, but his style of equipment was different. Bob believes in multiplanar training, you know, and he'd probably be a good guest. I could probably ask him if you get him on and talk about all the different ways he
I would like
trains
that.
In rehab.
Yeah, I would like that. All right, so then, you know what, we'll segue away from that and have him on the show. So, in summary, talk about some of the guys who promoted the notion of intra-workout feedings, and this goes back to you and I had a couple laughs about this, and I did a show about these guys. There were three brothers that worked in vaudeville as strongmen. They really were amazingly strong guys. They would actually drink copious amounts of beer too, as well, during
the
training. Saxons,
yeah. Those are the guys I like to model my training after.
Is it the beer or the chicken?
They would have a keg of beer and run around from set drinking beer in between sets. Like, Arthur Saxon was incredibly strong. Unfortunately, he died at the age of about 43.
I wonder why.
Well, his brothers lived a lot longer. Like,
oh,
I
really?
Mean, the guy was the cook. He lived into his 80s, I believe. But Arthur could consume a lot of booze. Like, I mean, it was unbelievable how much he could drink. But he was incredibly strong, too.
Everybody focuses on the beer that they drank, but they also ate like a half a dozen chickens during a training session.
Yeah, I got their diet. Like I said, the one brother took care of all the food, and how many pounds of pork or bacon or whatever they would have for breakfast and eggs. And the diet is in volume one. I just can't remember it offhand, but the diet really became the bodybuilding diet that we know today, with the multiple meals and frequent feedings, came in. Perry Rader was actually starting to start drinking the milk between meals to get that those three meals a day, start drinking between to bring it into five. But it was Irvin Johnson in the early 50s, like Jim Park is considered to be the first nutritionally trained Mr. America.
Right.
Under Blair, because Blair had him on low carbohydrate, he had him on frequent feedings, but doing these multiple meals a day. And Perry Rader, when he did his every 30 minutes of training for that one day, he again was talking and writing about Irvin Johnson, how Johnson believed in that frequent feeding. So Perry too was eating every 2 hours during that day. To try to feed the muscles. Again, you got to get something that's going to be rapidly assimilated and digested and assimilated. But again, these guys started to play with these notions, and the guys just starting to drink. Like, I mean, most people can't even drink a gallon of milk in a day, let alone drinking a gallon of milk during a workout.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we would say that's a lot of milk to drink, a full gallon of milk to drink. That's like 3,000 calories right there.
Yeah.
But these guys were doing it, and they had, again, but these were like our champion bodybuilders. They had great bodily constitutions, great physiologies. They could digest it and bring it in, and they just worked. Don Holworth, before he ever took any steroids, got at 5'10", got up to 230-something pounds, and, you know, he said he had to eat, and that's what most people today in bodybuilding, building muscle, have a hard time getting around, is just how much sometimes you have to eat, and if you can assimilate all that food.
Yeah.
Bob Guida too, when he was competing, he was eating 6 steaks a day, 18 eggs a day, which is a lot of food. Tried eating 6 steaks a day. Don, his calories, I think I counted them up around 8,000. Don Holworth was doing the 3 dozen eggs a day, 2 pounds of meat, a quart of raw cream, and some raw milk. That's a lot of food. That's a lot of food.
I actually, this 3 hour and 44 minute session I did the other day, which, by the way, I didn't cry the blues and say, oh, I've got a pinched nerve in my neck and it's bothering my arm, my shoulder. Actually, when I cough, I have a shooting pain that goes my complete shoulder all the way into my tricep and down into my forearm. And it's getting better. I've been to the chiropractor several times. I had to go this morning again. But I was eating a meal every 40 minutes, and we're going to divulge what that meal is later once I realize that this is working. But I can tell you that that meal was a huge drinkable meal with supplements built into it. Every 40 minutes, and I have to tell you that around the first 40 minutes when I went out to go drink my meal. I felt exhausted already from the work that I was doing, because at that point in time, I was doing all different types of supersets and super slow movements. And I was already fatigued and exhausted. And within minutes of drinking that meal, I felt invigorated. And I thought to myself, oh, my God, I wouldn't be able to do this without drinking this meal. And I looked forward to that 40 minutes. You know, I thought, oh, man, this is a lot to drink every 40 minutes. I was actually just as worried about getting down the drinkable food that I was going to be encountering and thinking, oh, you know what, I'll just skip it to every other 40 minutes, I thought. And then when 40 minutes rolled around, I was like hungering. I ran into the locker room. I had powder all over my shirt because I'm flailing this stuff into my shaker bottle, shaking it up and drinking, throwing supplements in my mouth. And walking out of the locker room, I could feel it already going to work. I could feel like I was becoming invigorated, like my body was going, okay, we can do this. So I got a feeling that intra-workout meals is critical. And that's another thing that makes these long training sessions impossible to the average person, because most people are thinking to themselves, look, I'm exhausted after an hour in the gym. I couldn't do 3 hours and four. Aha, yes, you're right. But if you ate what I ate every 40 minutes, I think you could.
Well, your time will tell. See, the problem is in terms of what you're eating, too. The blood, it's a tug of war. Your muscles are demanding the blood to the working muscles, and the intestinal tract is demanding a lot of blood in the intestinal area for the digestion of the food. That's why we always had that fear of cramping and going swimming after eating, right?
Right.
You know, because that tug of war of, again, the style of training you're doing, I will just sit back and wait to see how long you can do it. So, and because that's a lot of work. It's a lot of stress on the body, and only time will tell you.
I think the next session I'm going to perform, and we're going to take a break here in a minute because we're going long on all these, but it's very interesting dialogue as far as I'm concerned. But the next thing I'm going to do is chest, because my chest and my arms never grow. My shoulders are nice and round. And, you know, my legs grow. My back is wider than it needs to be and thicker. But I'm going to do this again probably within the next couple weeks. And I'm going to go in and I'm going to establish a routine for chest. And I'm going to go in there and spend probably not 3 hours and 44 minutes, but probably 3 hours. Now that I did this once, I think I could cut a lot of time out by changing the types of movements in between, the superset movements and so on. So I'm going to try this.
Well, since what you're doing that's going to help you a lot is you're not doing it every second day.
No, I would say once a month, twice a month maximum, you could do this for a lagging body part, and that's it. That's it.
Yeah, and the guys that used to do that, they'd take that lagging body part and beat the crap out of it. So I'm interested in see how you make out yourself.
All right, let's take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Randy Roach about Muscle Smoke and Mirrors, Volume 1, Volume 2, and soon Volume 3. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Are your goals longevity, endurance, vitality, or wellness? Well, you'll find everything you're looking for at uscellwellness.com. US Cell Wellness was founded on the belief that total well-being begins at the most basic cellular level. Their natural supplements are designed to work with the body to achieve health and vitality. Their formulas are backed by a team of nutritional researchers, healthcare professionals, and nutritional supplement biochemists. Whether you're concerned for your own wellness or a clinician caring for others, it all starts at uscellwellness.com. Save 20% off your first purchase when you use the coupon code SUPER. I have never endorsed a training guide before, The Blueprint by Rob Regish. The Blueprint combines the best techniques for building muscle and gaining strength with the best tips on supplementation and nutrition. Everyone who has used The Blueprint has surpassed their expectations in muscular gains in record time. You'll learn how to break through any plateau, how to make gains from every single workout, and all for the price of a single supplement purchase. Get your copy of The Blueprint today by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Blueprint banner ad. Order today and get copies of both the Blueprint 2.0 and 3.0, plus ongoing support on the Blueprint forum to ensure your success. 6-Oxo is back thanks to Iron Mag Lab, the gold standard for testosterone boosting and estrogen reduction that all other over-the-counter aromatase inhibitors are compared to, is 6-Oxo progesterone. 6-Oxo is the active ingredient in the new E-Control RX from Iron Mag Labs. Iron Mag Labs has resurrected the beast that has been clinically shown to raise free testosterone by as much
much as 226%. As men age, estrogen rises and testosterone drops. E-Control RX can help reverse this from happening. E-Control RX is suitable for post-cycle therapy to jumpstart natural testosterone production. Get E-Control RX today. Go to IronMagLabs.com today. You already know how great the Testo 100 transdermal testosterone boosting patch is. Well, now it's even better. The new and improved Testo 100 patch now contains diaspartic acid, stinging nettle root, and androstenotrione to increase free testosterone while reducing sex hormone binding globulin and aromatase enzyme. It's still made in FDA-certified labs and contains all the great ingredients that made it work originally. But now it's even better, bypassing the stomach to deliver its ingredients throughout the day for greater increases in energy, libido, and muscle-building, fat-burning effects. Get 50% off when you use the coupon code SHR4. Go to AGEFORCE.com and use the coupon code SHR4 and get your new Testo 100 patch today.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents, but rest assured, there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Okay, was geht ab? Guten Morgen, es ist 7:30 hier auf We Got Soul FM.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Randy Roach, author of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. So, Randy, are you working on Volume 3 yet, or are you still taking a little time off?
No, I'm working on it. I'm kind of working on a Gold Gym World saga again, behind the scenes there. There's, like I said, I got 55% of that book was already drafted before I even finished Volume 2, because good chunk of what I'm working on now was supposed to be in Volume 2, but Arthur Jones and Nautilus took up much more. I wanted to put that in there with Jones because I think his work was very important. It was the foundation of a lot of things that would take off from there. Basically, every machine out there today, is almost every machine, is a derivative of what he started.
Right.
And, you know, he got even the exercise, computerized exercise equipment they were starting back then. So I thought it was important to put his work there, and I bumped a lot of stuff into the third volume. So it's there. The women, I've got like 4 chapters on the women already done, and Arnold's return, Frankel's 81, you know, incredible stuff between Ben Weider and Wayne D'Amelio, a relationship never told before. The rise of professional bodybuilding in terms of how it took off in the 80s. Like the apex of bodybuilding, I believe, was in the 1980s. It was all over. It was on Wide World of Sports still.
Right.
And all the actors, you know, Schwarzenegger was now number one box office star. Stallone's training, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Dolph Lundgren. All these guys are bodybuilders on the side.
Right.
Working out. So that, but it was, you know, that relationship too with Wayne and Ben has never been, it's misunderstood. And that's going to be told. It's going to be a lot of Wayne D'Amelio's story in this book.
Yeah, because he really part of the growing landscape of bodybuilding, or, you know, as a facilitator, as a promoter, and so on and so forth, right?
Huge part of that story that the Weiders wrote out of their book, Brothers of Iron, which is
really
unbelievable. Yeah. Emmanuel Orlik, Ken Sprague, Wayne D'Amelio do not exist in the Weider book. And that's bizarre.
That's sad.
Well, it's ridiculous what it is. But,
yeah.
Wayne's a very credible guy. I've been talking to him for 7 or 8 years now. I tried to get Ben while he's still alive.
Right.
Ben, he responded to email, but he wouldn't speak. And I didn't expect him too, but I did try. But this is an interesting story. It is. And even the death of Mohammed Benaziz, there'll be a chapter in this book that I did not write. It is directly the words and experience of Wayne D'Amelio, who was with Mohammed Benaziz when he died, in, I believe, in 1993.
Actually, I know somebody else. I know personally somebody else that was with him, and that was Porter Cottrell, because Porter Cottrell was applying CPR. Porter Cottrell's a trained firefighter.
Porter's in that version. I haven't read in a couple of years, but Porter's there, yeah.
Interestingly enough, you talk about the mainstream bodybuilding when it kind of hit. I mean, it used to be featured on ESPN and stuff, and I can't help but invoke the name of Porter Cottrell again, because one of the things that, I don't know if you told me this or someone else told me, but during the Olympia, which it was televised at that time on ESPN, Arnold Schwarzenegger circled Porter Cottrell's distended stomach
on
TV.
Yeah, I told you that.
Yeah, you told me that, yeah. So.
Yeah, he pointed that out. Apparently, Arnold didn't like that. He didn't like it. And he actually told Wayne, Wayne, what's with the gut, the big guts, you know?
Right.
And Wayne said, well, talk to your judges.
Yeah, right.
You know, so the bodybuilders are just doing what, you know, in 1994, you know. I don't want to say too much now. I'm more so writing about it.
No, that's fine.
It's the judging is just totally mind-boggling in bodybuilding. Forget the fixing of the shows we talked about in Volume 2, but in terms of what they were picking and where they took the sport in the 90s onward is...
Not to derail this conversation, but anecdotally, I'm not convinced that the distended stomach is from growth hormone any longer.
Well, it was never from the growth hormone to say, period. It was a combination of things. According to Marty Pasquale,
right,
it was a combination of even the IGF-1, the insulin, and the GH. They were the big combo, the big three that came. They were already there in the 80s, but in big dosages in the 90s. And the visceral fat, you know, everything was just growing. Like, there's some shots of some of these guys who weren't paying attention at the cameras on them. It's like,
I'll never forget there was a Puerto Rican bodybuilder, Gustavo, his last name starts with a B, Bedin or Gustavo Bedin, or I can't think of his name right now.
Okay.
But this was just maybe 5 years ago. I remember going to either the Arnold or the Olympia and seeing him. And he was a handsome guy. He had an amazing physique. But when he relaxed, he actually looked like he had a tortoise shell tied to his stomach. I mean, it popped out so far that he could be accused of being with child at 4 or 5 months. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, but I'll tell you, just through my own experimentation, I ended up with a distended stomach for a while, and I wasn't using any of the things that are held responsible for it. But I started to suspect aromatase inhibitors, and I'll tell you why. I think aromatase inhibitors disrupt the P450 cytochrome cascade dramatically. Everything downline from aromatase gets disrupted, and I ended up with a distended stomach that eventually went away when I stopped my use of aromatase inhibitors. So,
yeah, but they're being used back in the 70s already. But these they may play a role, but the stomachs really took off with the massive increase of growth hormone and IGF-1 and insulin.
Yeah.
But they may have a role. There's a possibility. I know Grimkowski was using them back in the mid-70s already.
Right, right. Yeah, he was a great interview, by the way. Listen, Randy, I want to thank you for taking time to come on the show and harken back and give us some of the history behind some of these longer training sessions and then obviously the transition to the more manageable training sessions. The book is Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. I kid you not, it's the single best read that you will ever read if you have any interest in training, nutrition, physical culture. There's nothing like it. No one is writing about what Randy is writing about. So pay him homage and buy a book. Go to randyroach.ca, get volume 1, read it, then get volume 2, and you'll be the smartest person in your gym when it comes to talking about the origins of what we do day in and day out there. Randy, thanks for being on Superhuman Radio today.
Oh, you're welcome, Carl.
Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
We also want to thank, I'm going to forget his name now, isn't that some? Cam Mitchell from McMaster University for coming on the show today
and talking to us about the fact that, hey, you don't have to lift heavy to get big muscles. You just have to go to failure. However you get there, you'll grow. We'll see you tomorrow with another episode of Superhuman Radio.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Protein is the building block of muscle.